One of the best ways to learn is by experience, and farming is no exception.
Even if you only go and work on a farm for a few months, you're going to learn so much. Even if you decide that you don't want to farm, you're going to learn so much about yourself.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Many people dream of getting back to the land and becoming a farmer. But farming takes a lot of forms and requires knowledge and skill. This hour, apprentice programs and internships for people who want to farm. I'll talk with a young Iowan who's traveling the country working as a farm apprentice, and we'll learn about the Farming Institute, a beginning farmer training program, and find out how Practical Farmers of Iowa is preparing the next generation. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. You can go to school to learn to be a farmer. You can learn to be a farmer by growing up on and working on a farm. But let's say you want to be a farmer and you don't want to go back to school and you don't come from a farming family, or you want to learn a different kind of farming. This hour, apprentice programs and internships for people who want to farm. Coming up, we'll talk about some of the programs available in Iowa. But first, with me is an Iowan who's been traveling across the country working as a farm apprentice for the last year. Ash Bruxford is here. Hello, Ash.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here. And Ash, once upon a time, was an intern at Iowa Public Radio. So this is kind of full circle for us. But Ash, what made you want to start looking into farm internships? How did this idea come about for you?
It really started when I was an undergraduate at the University of Iowa, and I was an English major, and I was working, volunteering for this organization called Local Foods Connection. And part of my volunteering for that organization was going to farms in eastern Iowa and just volunteering on them for a day. And around that time, I also learned about the Women Food and Ag Network in Iowa, and I found out that they offered these mentorship programs for 2 months, and I grew up on a farm. I grew up on a conventional farm in Iowa, and I was always kind of interested in starting an organic farm or getting that kind of experience, but I really didn't know where to start. So I learned about the WFAN mentorships, and they were 2-month mentorships where you went and like lived on the farm with somebody, and I kind of just tucked that in the back of my mind, and I couldn't really do it at the time. But then I got out of school and I was working for the Nature Conservancy for a couple of years in fundraising, and I was pretty unhappy in fundraising, and I decided that I was going to quit my job, and I didn't really have much of a plan, and sort of kismet, I got an email from WFAN that they were looking for mentees that fall, and so I decided to apply, and then I got a mentorship with Denise O'Brien, who was the founder of the organization.
Wow. So that first internship, tell me a little bit about it.
So that first one, I was living with Denise and her husband Larry at their farm. They've been farming for like 30-some years, but they had just started a CSA. So I was living with them and working with Denise every day. And pretty much every day, Denise really let me be very self-directed in what I wanted to learn. And she was pretty much right by me most of the time when I was working. So it was really more about establishing a relationship with her and learning as like a friend than it was about like going to class and like learning about agriculture, because I was never somebody who was very sciencey or like interested in biology or anything like that. And I always kind of felt like maybe I was too stupid to like understand how to farm. So working with Denise really just gave me the confidence and made me comfortable on a farm, learning about how to harvest kale. I mean, I had no idea how to do that. I showed up and I was like, I don't even recognize what this is, basically. So that 2 months with her was great. And she still is my biggest mentor.
Now, 2 months on a farm, though, that doesn't take you through a whole growing season. You don't see something from start to finish that way. But it sounds like it really kind of whet your appetite.
Yes.
So where did you go next?
So once I finished with Denise, I found I knew I wanted to go out west. I thought maybe California or Oregon so that I could work over the winter because I started in August and I was done in October, and it was just like, okay, what now? I really like this, and now I'm just supposed to go find like another job. I'm not really going to be able to work on a farm in Iowa during the winter. So I went to the ATRA database and found a farm in California near Chico, California. And I applied for that job and a few other jobs in California and Oregon and actually one in Texas, which I kind of hoped I didn't get. So I interviewed with them and they were okay with me coming out just for the winter for 4 months. And so that's where I went next.
And what was that experience like?
So that farm was really different. It was primarily for farmers markets. They're one of the biggest sellers at the Chico farmers markets every Saturday. And so they're not growing as big a variety of crops. They're big tomato, lettuce, your standard like vegetables that everybody is going to buy at the market. That's what they're growing. And I wanted to have that kind of experience because I wanted to be able to compare what it's like having a CSA to what it's like just primarily growing for farmers markets or grocery stores. And I got that experience. I decided like the CSA model better.
Were there a number of other mentees or apprentices that you were working with?
Yeah. There were about 5 to 7 apprentices on that farm throughout the winter, and they have up to 12 during the summer growing season. So it was a much bigger operation and not as much one-on-one time as I did when I was the only intern at Denise's farm.
Did you get an idea of what some of the other people were looking for with these apprentice programs? I mean, you're kind of in a journey of discovery right now. What are some of the other things that bring people to these programs?
At the farm in California, it was really a lot of different things. So there was one guy who had like hitchhiked to California and just kind of showed up at the farm because his friend was working there, and then he kind of liked it and decided to stay for 7 months or whatever. But another girl who worked there, her and I were really close, she really wanted to either work for she wanted to own her own farm or get into food advocacy. And that's something that's really common, I think. People who aren't actually interested in becoming farmers themselves or owning their own farms are generally interested in activism. And actually, my roommate at the next farm I'm going to, that's more what she's interested in. She really doesn't want to have her own farm. She's more interested in food justice.
All right. So this is some hands-on experience to understand what she'll be talking about.
Exactly.
So where's your – I know you're en route right now. You are driving to upstate New York.
Yes.
And you stopped in Iowa City, which is very kind of you. What's the next adventure?
So the next farm I'm going to is in Madison, New York. Like you said, upstate New York, about 45 minutes southeast of Syracuse. And I'll be working at a 120-member CSA, so a lot bigger than Denise and Larry's CSA, which is about 25 members. So it'll be a very different experience from that. There's going to be 5 apprentices working on the farm, but for the first time I'll be living off of the farm and have my own apartment. And the other thing that really drew me to this farm was that they have like a curriculum that they're actually teaching their apprentices. So I really wanted to go from a more general kind of just understanding the farm to a more kind of getting in the weeds. And this farm, I'll be, literally in the weeds. And this farm, I'll also be learning more about mechanization and how to drive a tractor and things like that, which was something I really wanted to do.
And why New York? I'm sure that your parents are probably wondering, hey, we're in Iowa. This is where people farm. Why California? Why? I understand you wanted to grow things in the winter, but why New York?
Yeah, I think, for one thing, I really wanted to get in my first year of farming the experience of working on both the East Coast and the West Coast and be able to compare it to Iowa, which is where I've grown up my whole life. But the other thing is, for a lot of people in organic farming, I would say going to upstate New York or Vermont is kind of a rite of passage. There's a lot of organic farms in that part of the country, and a lot of young people flock to that part of the country. Actually, the girl I was talking about earlier who I worked with in California, she got a job working on a farm in Vermont this summer. So we're going to be not that far from each other. And I know that Denise also, she also worked in California and Vermont when she was a beginning farmer. So it just seems like something that people like me like to do, I guess.
So for people like you, for young people who want to get this kind of experience, what is your advice based on what you've learned in the last year?
Definitely, I would say if you want to do it and you are a young person, you should do it now. Because there are so many people I know, some of my cousins even, who are older, have kids and things like that, and they say they wish they would have done it when they were my age. So I would say don't be scared to do it, because if you don't do it now, you'll never know if that's something you really wanted to do or not. You're not working on a farm isn't going to hurt you. It's only going to make you a better person. And the other thing I would say is there's a lot of beginning farmer programs, and you can take it as seriously or not seriously as you want to. If you want to just do it for a little while, I would say that looking into wolfing, worldwide opportunities for or on organic farms, is a really good way to just volunteer on a farm if you want to do that for a little while. If you want to make money and do it, I think the ATRA database is a really good resource. Otherwise, there are other programs in Iowa if you're really serious and know that it's something you want to do.
So based on the experiences that you've had, how does this shape your vision of your future? What do you want to do with this?
I think definitely I at least want to continue working on organic farms around the country and probably come back to Iowa here at some point in the near future. They say, 3 to 5 years, you're really supposed to be apprenticing on other people's farms. And I know not everybody does that, but for me, that seems pretty okay. I'm about a year in now, so a couple more years apprenticing on other people's farms before I really decide if I want to move back to Iowa and start my own farm. But that is a long-term goal for me.
What is the thing that you've learned so far that has been most surprising to you about this lifestyle?
I mean, I knew how uncertain farming was growing up with a dad who was a farmer. I mean, even conventional farmers, it is always very uncertain. But I think the amount of stress that farmers have to go through every single day continues to surprise me. And the ways that people deal with that stress, too, it can be very surprising.
So it's even more difficult than you expected it to be?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say.
I have an idea that a lot of the young people who do participate in these programs come to it with an ideal mm-hmm. idea of what farming, especially organic farming, is going to be like. Do you see a lot of people dropping away when they realize how difficult and how stressful farming is?
Most definitely. And I know in my experience working with other people going through this process, and even myself, working on an organic farm, a lot of times you're by yourself in the field, and if you're dealing with any sort of like troubles in your life, it can be really hard. So that's just something people have to keep dealing with. It's not for everyone.
Ash, thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And safe travels on your way to New York.
Thank you.
Ash Brexport is an Iowan who's been apprenticing on different farms around the country for the last 8 months or so. She's going to continue that journey. Maybe we'll hear from her again on that journey. In a moment, we'll talk about apprenticeship programs in Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about apprentice programs and internships for people who want to farm. And now we're going to talk about a couple of programs in Iowa for people who are looking for farming experience. Kate Edwards is here with me. She's co-founder of the Farming Institute, a beginner farmer training program, and owner and operator of Wildwoods Farm in Iowa City, or the Iowa City area, and a CSA. Hello, Kate.
Hello.
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Steve Carlson is also here. He's the beginning farmer and program associate with Practical Farmers of Iowa. Hello, Steve.
Charity, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being here today. And I know that there are a lot of people who are looking for farming experience. And for a long time, there weren't a lot of great ways to get that kind of farming experience other than going to school. I mean, Kate, for you, how did you get into farming? Where did you get the experience that you needed?
From a couple of different places. It started with a passion that came from both sets of grandparents being farmers and growing up a generation removed from farming and being aware of agriculture but not necessarily knowing how to do it. And when I decided to leave my job and to start farming, I went to my uncle, and he spent some time with me on my grandparents' farm. It was a conventional farm, but I knew that I wanted to get into agriculture, and it was going to be needing to be small-scale agriculture due to the economic constraints of getting into large agriculture. So I sought out mentors, and really Practical Farmers of Iowa was a huge resource to me in finding mentors.
And Steve, you can fill in the blanks here. Did you have a program in place? How has this evolved over time?
Well, actually, our program that we do now that kind of solves this problem of getting experience for these beginning farmers is now just entering its third year. So Practical Farmers of Iowa has been around for 30 years, and we've had beginning farmer resources, some education opportunities, but nothing quite like this experience that we're now offering through Labor for Learning.
All right, and tell me what Labor for Learning is. Give us an idea.
Yeah, it's a program that helps beginning or aspiring farmers get paid on-the-job training with experienced farmers. So we have 12 experienced Practical Farmers of Iowa member farmers across the state, and they'll be they're hiring. These are farmers who will be hiring an employee anyway, and we've asked them to hire someone from our beginning farmer network and then to provide them additional training beyond the kind of typical tasks that an employee normally does as a farm worker.
And that sounds like a good deal on both sides. How do you prepare the farmer who's going to be a mentor to really actually teach someone as opposed to just employ someone?
Sure. Well, first of all, we are pretty selective with who we allow or who we request to be a trainer in this program. So they have to go through a hiring process with us first. I have a committee of PFI members that help select the PFI trainers. And so we look for individuals who have been farming for a long period of time and who seem to be doing a good job at it. And a lot of these trainers are people who have an interest in the next generation of Iowa's farmers. So they're not just using the program to get a good motivated employee, but they're actually motivated themselves to pass on the knowledge to these next generations of farmers.
And I was talking with Ash a few minutes ago about how some people come into these kind of programs with an idea of farming that doesn't necessarily reflect reality. When you are arranging for people to be the learners in this situation, is there a sort of a weed out process?
Yeah, absolutely. To be honest with you, once we select our trainers, we work with the trainers to get their job positions posted on our website. But then the trainers themselves will select who they hire. So they are a big part of the process of, you know, trying to select someone who really might have a good idea of what they're getting themselves into. So we certainly we work with the beginning farmers in our network to connect them with these resources, but the farmers themselves will kind of do the normal hiring process of interviews and applications and things to try and get an idea of what this person does know that they're getting themselves into.
All right. And Kate, tell me about the Farming Institute.
So the Farming Institute is a beginning farmer training program, and we seek to help a beginning and aspiring farmers kind of connect the dots between the realism of farming and the idealism and the passion that they have towards farming. We have two components to it. One is some winter workshops, and that is designed for people who are aspiring but are in full-time jobs and don't have the time to take a full summer off, or people who are already on farms and wanting additional training. And we focus on the business aspect and kind of life planning aspect of farming in those winter workshops. And then in the summer, we have an intensive on-farm training program that combines the practicality of in-field tasks with also the philosophy of behind farming and the business side of farming. So we have a curriculum that we go through with our students, and then we design it to be connected to what they actually want to do. So we work a lot one-on-one with the students to figure out what it is that they're actually hoping to do with their future farm.
And how long have you been doing this?
So we're entering into our third summer with this program.
All right. So also a fairly young program. Mm-hmm. How many students have you had over the summers?
So we have around four every summer. Sometimes it's a few more, but generally around four. And they work either on my farm or on Susan Utes' farm, who's a longtime local foods provider for the Iowa City area.
And what was the need that you saw? I mean, Practical Farmers of Iowa was a place that you turned to when you needed help, and Labor for Learning was starting just about the same time as your program. But what was the need that you identified that you wanted to fill?
So I think there's, when I first started farming, I looked at a lot of farming programs across the country that were 10-month-long programs, and you had to completely uproot yourself, move to another part of the country for 10 months to learn the practicalities of farming. And I wanted to, I started to realize that a lot of people didn't have that much time. So we wanted to do a really intensive program and to pack a lot in the kind of the height of the summer months. But also saw this need to be holistic about it. There is a business component to farming. One of the things that we work through a whole business plan with our students, and there's marketing, there's operations, there's all sorts of practicalities that go into farming and the business side of things. So we really found the need to kind of combine this idea of the practicalities of farming with the business of farming, with the life planning, because farming is not just a job, it's a lifestyle.
Did you create the program that you wished had been available when you started out?
I did. Or we did. I'm a co-founder, but
right.
Yes.
Right. We're going to talk with people who have been mentors in the Labor for Learning program, people who have been mentees in the Labor for Learning program. We also want to hear from you this hour. If you've had experience as an apprentice farmer, or if you can share your experience learning to farm, teaching someone else to farm, join the conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Steve Carlson. He's the beginning farmer and program associate with Practical Farmers of Iowa. And Kate Edwards, who's co-founder of the Farming Institute. She's also the owner and operator of Wildwoods Farm, an Iowa City area CSA. And Rick is on the line in Minborn. And this is Rick Hartman, and he is one of the mentors in the Practical Farmers of Iowa program. Hello, Rick.
Hi, good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today. And your farm is Small Potatoes Farm, am I right about that?
You're right about that.
All right. And tell me a little bit about your operation, Rick.
Well, we're in our 11th year of organic certification. We service about 100 families between Ames and Des Moines. It's a very intensive vegetable production. We deliver each week throughout the season, and we are in our second year of the PFI Labor for Learning program.
What made you want to get involved with the program?
Well, my wife and I recognized that many beginning farmers were not being successful, particularly CSAs. So in our last five-year farm plan, we committed to incorporating apprenticeships and trainings into our farm to provide more support for new CSA farmers.
And how does that play out in practical terms? How has that worked out over the last 2 years?
Well, last year was our first apprentice, and we were very happy with the arrangement. Matthew Wise came to work for us last year through the Labor for Learning program. He quit a very lucrative IT job following his dream of being a farmer. He was very well organized and had planned this out for several years and is beginning his CSA this year with 25 members in Earlham, Iowa, and his farm's called Earlham Heirloom.
So you've been able to watch him go from start to startup, I guess.
Yes. So it's been very satisfying.
And I just asked Kate this question. Being involved in this program, are you doing something that you wish had been available to you when you started out, Rick?
Yes. I struggled very much in my first 5 years, had many failures, had very little money. But I did use an informal network of particularly PFI farmers that were experienced. Called them on the phone often, and they were very available to me and very open and very honest. And between the struggle and the help, we figured out how to become, I would say, a pretty stable, durable farm here in Central Iowa.
I think most of us, if we're established in our careers, have one or two pieces of advice that we wind up giving out to a lot of young people who want to do what we do. So, Rick, what are the one or two things that you would really want everyone who's thinking about becoming a farmer, an organic farmer, to know?
I would say to slow down, temper your passion with practical realism, do good planning, particularly a business plan, take the time to learn and become familiar with the career that you're about to embark on, because the risks are very high. And I really applaud PFI and Kate and other people that are giving people an opportunity to slow down and gain some experience before they make a big commitment in their time, resources, and capital.
Well, Rick, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Rick Hartman, he is the proprietor of Small Potatoes Farm near Minburn. And now let's look at the flip side of that coin. Jack Davis is on the line in Adel. And Jack, you were a mentee in this program. Can you tell me how you got started?
Yeah, so I moved back to Iowa after being a forester out west for several years and wanted to come back and start up an organic farm. I got directed towards Practical Farmers of Iowa, and they set me up with a wonderful mentor down in Columbus, Iowa, Blue Gate Farms. Jill and Sean were wonderful teachers. They've taught me how to successfully have a CSA, the do's and don'ts of what they've experienced over their 10 years of operation. Sean showed me a lot of the financial aspects, beekeeping. Jill showed me a lot of CSA-driven aspects of the business, as well as vegetable production. And then I kind of brought in just a few things from my forestry career on, you know, fruit tree upkeep and things like that. So it was kind of it was a wonderful, wonderful program.
What was the steepest part of the learning curve for you, do you feel?
Well, just that production level was very unknown to me. So I had come from a large farm from my family, but we did not produce anything. We were just prairie and woodlot restoration. And we had a small garden throughout my life. But seeing it on such a larger scale, they had about 4.5 acres, 5 acres of vegetables. So seeing all the stresses that go into trying to keep your CSA happy, keeping those boxes full and keeping those going out the door every week was kind of eye-opening for me.
What was a typical day of work like for you?
Lots of smiling laughter coupled with lots of weeding and planting. We had to make sure that we had a constant rotation going on the farm. So when one stream of vegetables was getting ready to near the end of their production life, we were already ahead of the game by planting new vegetables into the ground. So we constantly had that stream of vegetables coming through.
How many days a week did you work?
It was a full-time position. So I worked 7 months, five days a week.
Okay. Now, I know what full-time means in the real world, and I know that in farming, for a lot of people, I mean, this is a 6-7-day-a-week job, Kate.
Yes, it can be, especially during the season.
So, Jack, what was it? I mean, you got to see this up close and personal. You got to be a part of it. And, you know, I was talking earlier with Ash about the stress and the uncertainty. What was it about your experience as a mentee that reinforced your desire to actually become a farmer and have your own CSA?
So I really liked what the other speakers were talking about taking a slow approach. So it's very easy when you're first coming in to have that passion and drive really kind of firing you up and, oh, I'm going to buy all this infrastructure and brand new tractor and I'm going to have 5 acres right off the bat. But realistically, that's not the way to go about starting up a business. And Jill and Sean were wonderful at telling me, you know, just make sure you take your time, make sure you're thinking this all the way through. You know, you don't want to just jump right into the deep end with this. So.
And this season will be your first growing season with your own CSA, right?
Yeah. So I have a very small CSA. I'm just testing it out with about 5 full-time CSA members, and then we'll just have a few that will be paying by the month, and I'll just be trying to keep their boxes filled. Mainly I'm a fruit orchard at this point. I have about a little less than 60 fruit trees, 36 of them produced last year, hoping for a little bit more this year, and then a little less than an acre of vegetables.
All right. Well, best of luck to you.
Thank you so much, Shirley.
Jack Davis was a mentee in the Labor for Learning program with Practical Farmers of Iowa, and he is starting his own CSA near Adel. We'll continue this conversation in a moment. We're talking about apprenticeships and internship opportunities for people who want to learn to farm in Iowa. Steve Carlson is here from Practical Farmers of Iowa, and Kate Edwards, the co-founder of the Farming Institute and owner and operator of Wildwoods Farm near Iowa City. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about opportunities for people to learn to be organic farmers, sustainable agriculture, apprentice programs, and internships for people who want to farm in Iowa. With me, Kate Edwards. She's co-founder of the Farming Institute, a beginning farmer training program. She's also the owner and operator of Wildwoods Farm, which is a CSA in the Iowa City area. Steve Carlson is here. He is beginning farmer and program associate with Practical Farmers of Iowa. And you are welcome to join the conversation as well. I know a lot of farmers in Iowa have taken many different paths to getting to that place. We'd love to hear your story. If you've been involved in one of these mentorship programs or internship programs, we'd love to hear your story. You can give me a call at 866-780-9100, tweet us at IPR Talk, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Keith is on the line in Osage. Hi, Keith.
Good morning.
What's your experience?
My experience is concerning the availability of land. It's one thing to desire to farm and have resources. It's another thing to find some land that you can farm. And this is, the Iowa legislature has done a remarkable job of making this possible with a beginning farmer tax credit. And it's a credit you can either, if you're letting somebody take land, a beginning farmer, and they qualify, there's quite a criteria for it, but if they qualify as beginning farmers, there's a tax credit to the landowner, which is equivalent to 7% of the cash rent on that farm, or there's another formula if you're talking about sharecropping. But we just recently did this for this last crop year. The land that I'm talking about, my family's owned it for 160 years, so we're fairly concerned about who farms it. We had a young man approach us, and we decided it was a program that would permit him to start farming, and we went through the hoops and established it through the state of Iowa. It's an excellent program.
Well, terrific, and it's worked out well for you.
Very well, and the thing about it is they're very careful about not getting somebody in over their head. They require financial statements from banks and bank statement, indicating that the person likely will be successful before they allow anybody to do this. So it's a process, but it's one that I found that the people in the administering the program are very helpful. They're very professional, and it's been a delightful experience for us to provide, in this case, 175 acres for a young man that would never have found land other than this.
Right. Well, Keith, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us today.
You're welcome.
You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. Now, Keith's experience is not exactly what we were talking about today, but Steve, a lot of young farmers are looking for land. I know Practical Farmers of Iowa also has some programs to help connect farmers who are looking at retirement with young farmers who may want to take over their operation and making that possible. I mean, the need for land, the opportunity to find land in Iowa is an incredible barrier for all different kinds of farmers, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a big deal for all farmers. And so we do annual surveys with our Beginning Farmer Network to find out just exactly what their needs are so we can build our programming around that. And land access is one of by far the biggest issues. And so we do have something going on right now. It's called findafarmer.net. That's the web address that is basically a resource that that we use to connect aging farmers, aging landowners with aspiring farmers, people who are looking to take over an operation, because there is a lot of land transfer going on within families across Iowa. As Keith just said, he has land within his family for something like 160 years. And so we work with families to do that, but there's a lot of families that don't have somebody who's going to take over the family land. And so we look to help a lot of these families are really concerned about the stewardship of this land going forward, and so they don't want to just sell it to just anybody. So we connect them with people who want to be good stewards and who want to see family farms thriving across the state of Iowa.
Well, and with so many different kinds of agriculture, the need for land is very different for different farmers. I mean, Kate, how much land do you farm?
So right now I have a 200-member CSA, and I do that on 3 acres of ground. But I'm renting ground and hope to buy land sometime in the near future, and we'll probably be buying somewhere around 20 acres.
Okay, so that's a lot of land for a CSA, but and incredibly labor-intensive to grow, to have a CSA on that much land. But, I mean, compared to the 1,000-acre farms that some farmers are hoping for or would like to get into, I mean, there's an incredible array of need and possibility there.
Yeah, so there's definitely need for land access. Most farmland in Iowa, something like 93% of the farmland in Iowa will be transferred to the next generation. And so for beginning farmers who don't have family ties to land, it's incredibly difficult to get access to that land.
And for people who aren't clear on these different kinds of agriculture, I mean, what makes it possible to farm a CSA on 3 acres? I mean, a corn and soybean farmer would never be able to make a living on 3 acres of land.
Right. So if you think about a corn and soybean farmer is going to be making, hundreds of dollars per acre versus what I'm able to do. If you think about a home garden, if you have a 20 by 20 home garden, an acre of vegetables is about 400 times the size of a home garden. I'm a former engineer, so all my crop plans are on spreadsheets, and they're incredibly timed out, and they're really well planned out. But because vegetables are a higher value crop, and because there's a lot more labor intensiveness nature of it, I mean, I have a full time crew of 3 or 4 people during the summer that are helping to implement this plan. So we're really a different type of farm on 3 acres.
Well, and you mentioned the labor intensity, and I can imagine that makes it extremely difficult to make money as someone who operates a CSA. I mean, when people are starting out and they're trying to look at the financials, is that a little bit overwhelming?
Yeah, I mean, looking at the financials is an incredibly important piece. The margins are not necessarily what you'd think they'd be in farming. It depends on the type of farm. The margins can be anywhere from, 15 to 35%, sometimes higher if you're a really well-established farmer who's on a small scale. But there's a lot of input costs. There's materials, there's labor, there's rent, there's utilities. There's just all sorts of input costs that challenge that.
Do you find that to be a wake-up moment for a lot of the people that come to you and want to learn to be farmers?
I think when we start talking about finances, when we do the Beginning Farmer workshops through the Farming Institute, we we start everybody off with drawing their dream farm, and then we kind of build them up with all this idealism, and we talk about what this dream farm could look like. And then throughout the course of the workshop, we talk about the finances behind that dream, and try to also understand where people's personal debt load is, all sorts of factors that go into that, and what you can actually make from farming, and whether they need to be thinking about having an off-farm job at the same time. I have to say, for me, the reason I'm able to be a full-time farmer is because of the CSA model. When I first got into farming, I wasn't necessarily wanting to be a vegetable farmer or necessarily wanting to do a CSA, but CSA vegetable farming was the lowest input capital costs that it would allow me as a beginner to get into farming. And then CSA was a model, because it's direct from the consumer to the farmer, that value chain from field to fork is shortened, and so that the most of the food dollar can go back into the farm, and ultimately I can make a living as a farmer. I'm by no means making the engineer salary that I was, but I am able to make a living and hope to continue farming and to someday buy a farm.
Except you're also entirely responsible for that supply chain.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So there's a trade-off there.
There is a trade-off, but I do believe that CSAs is a great way for people to get into farming because of the ability to be part of that value chain.
Now, people are coming to you with a pretty specific idea of what kind of farming they want to do. Kate, what did you say?
So when we do our winter workshops, we work with all different types of farmers, not just vegetable farmers, and we work more on the business side and the life planning side of farming. So there we'll have livestock, row crop, vegetable farms, all sorts of different type of farming. In the summer program, the on-farm program, primarily it's people that want to get into vegetable farming or learn about vegetable farming because they want to be in food advocacy. And oftentimes they are interested in learning more about CSAs and how they operate.
And Steve, can you give me an idea of the variety of different kinds of farmers that come to you looking for experience?
Yeah, absolutely. So our beginning farmer network within Practical Farmers of Iowa is much like the greater membership. It's incredibly diverse. I think the most recent survey showed that livestock enterprises was the most popular, which it also encompasses a lot. So livestock would be poultry or swine, cattle, dairy. So livestock was slightly the most popular enterprise with our beginning farmer network. And then after that would be horticulture, which, you know, includes CSAs and other vegetable-type operations, as well as orcharding and fruit production. And then shortly, just after that, is row crops, so corn and soybeans and small grains and things like that. So a real diversity of beginning farmers that we work with, absolutely.
Is it possible for you to give me an idea of maybe a percentage of the beginning farmers that come to you looking for assistance and the people who actually become farmers?
Oh, boy, that would be kind of difficult to quantify just because there's such a great spectrum of, for instance, we consider beginning farmers in our network to be anybody with 0 to 9 years of experience farming. So, and that's the USDA definition is a beginning farmer is anybody that's been farming for less than 10 years. And so we kind of characterize them a little bit like aspiring farmers and then beginning farmers, and we have various outreach efforts for them. So it kind of depends on your definition. I think a lot of people maybe select themselves out once they start, you know, getting involved and seeing that this is not just a career but a lifestyle. A lot of people continue working and maybe they don't end up owning their own operation. But maybe they're, the production manager at a CSA farm. And so it's kind of hard to decide, at what point do you say that this person is a successful established farmer? And at what point are they still a learning and a beginning farmer? So I think I would like to say, obviously, we have a high success rate of getting interested people, to the place that they want to be on this farmer spectrum. But it's not for everybody, like Kate said.
Do you find that agricultural education programs are starting to be more flexible as far as the kinds of farmers that they're preparing?
Sure, absolutely. That's a reflection of the demand. And there's newer, Kate in the Farming Institute, that's only 3 years old. Our Labor for Learning program is only 3 years old. We have another program called Savings Incentive Program, and that's only a few years old as well. And so there's a lot of new things popping up, and some of them are for specific types of farming, but many, like our Labor for Learning program, is for any sort of interest or enterprise within farming. So there is, because of the demand, there's a greater diversity of options out there, and there's a lot of flexibility for beginning farmers who can really kind of get picky about what kind of experience they want to get.
And Kate, you've had far fewer students through your institute. Can you give me an idea of where some of your alums are now?
Yeah, so from the first year of our program, one of our students is now in his second year of farming. Another one is a farm manager at a farm in California. Another woman who was a student at Cornell University at the time that she went through our program is from Nepal and is back in Nepal working on some agricultural projects. And another one of the students is in AmeriCorps working on agricultural projects. So I would say that from that group, about 1 in 4 has decided to go into farming. And we found that with the program that we worked with this winter, too, the 35 beginning farmers we worked with, that a number of them are also going into farming.
Now, being the proprietor of a CSA is more than a full-time job. And as you mentioned, it doesn't exactly match your engineer's salary from before. Also, co-founding the Farming Institute is not something that necessarily has a financial payoff for you, and it's above and beyond what you were doing as a CSA operator. Why is this important for you?
I have a vision for agriculture. I want to see more farmers on the land. I think we've seen a mass exodus of farmers beginning probably at the turn of the century and then being instigated by the farm crisis and other things. And I believe that we should grow the food in the communities that we live in and that we need to train the farmers to be able to do that, train the consumers as well to be purchasing that food. But we have a huge opportunity in Iowa to produce the food for the people in our communities, and I am privileged and excited to be part of that process.
And Steve, you mentioned that these programs are not very old, and they are a response to demand. But do you see that demand continuing to grow? Are you hearing from more and more people every year?
Yeah, absolutely. Our Beginning Farmer Network is growing pretty exponentially. And I think it'll continue growing. And I think these programs that are in their infancy are going to continue to get stronger, and we'll continue to get people like Kate, I hope, will be a mentor in our program if she has time between her the Farming Institute and running her own CSA, that someday she has the right kind of attitude and passion for educating the next generation of farmers. And so there are people like that who will come to us for help, and there are people like Kate who will come to us to be there to help. And I think it'll definitely continue to grow, yes.
Now, we've talked a lot about Labor for Learning, which connects people in your network who are looking for on-farm jobs. You also have your Savings Incentive Program, and that's for people who are at the point where they're ready to start their own farm?
Yeah, right. I'd say Labor for Learning is a little bit for more of the kind of aspiring farmer who just wants to get the behind-the-scenes insider perspective as well as their experience on the farm. And then the Savings Incentive Program is, again, a mentorship match program because we value networking and connections and mentorship so much. It's a mentorship match program, but also it's for someone who's starting their own farm business, and we help them go through the business plan process and really establish themselves as their own farmer.
All right. And of course, people can find out more about these programs at practicalfarmers.org.
And that's right.
Kate, I know you don't have room for any more people in your summer program, but it's time to start planting, right?
Yeah, and we also are taking a wait list for this summer and already taking applications for next summer.
All right.
It's thefarminginstitute.com.
All right, terrific. Kate Edwards, co-founder of the Farming Institute and owner and operator of Wildwoods Farm, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
And Steve Carlson, beginning farmer and program associate with Practical Farmers of Iowa, thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Charity.
This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.